Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the proposition that Rava made yesterday, which is that in the Mishnah, when it says that one who carries out wine is culpable, that's why I meant a case where he's carrying out Yayin Chai, he's carrying out undiluted wine, and it's Rova Derivi'it, it's 1/16 of a log. Because, as Rava believes, when it comes to diluting of wine, you dilute it 3 parts water to 1 part wine. And therefore, our Mishnah says that when it comes to other liquids or any drinks, the shi'ur for Shabbat is considered to be a revi'it. Whereas for wine, the shi'ur will be rova revi'it, or reva revi'it, 1/16, a quarter of a quarter, because that undiluted wine can then be diluted to create a koshel bracha, a revi'it log of diluted wine, which will be ra'ui for bracha. The Gemara proved that from our Mishnah. Now along comes Abaye 5 lines down and says, Amar Abaye, shtei tshuvot badavar. I have 2 questions about your supposition, Rava. Chado. First of all, our Mishnah in Nida says, the Tanan, hamazog, shnei chelkei mayim, vechad yayin. When it comes to dilution of wine, that is 2 parts water, 1 part wine, minayayin ashironi, from the wine that comes from the Shiron, that's another location, or the Sharon, the plains of Eretz Yisrael. But that wine requires only dilution of 2 parts water, 1 part wine. And you're suggesting that it requires normal dilution of wine is 3 parts water to 1 part wine. Ve'od. And the other thing I don't understand is, mayim bekad mitztarfim. You are suggesting here that the undiluted wine, which does not reach the threshold of revi'i, is considered to be chashuv on Shabbat because when you dilute it, it'll reach a revi'i. But in the interim, the water that's going to be used to dilute it is not in this kos. It's in the pitcher. It's in the barrel. And therefore, how could you count that water towards the revi'it if it hasn't yet to dilute the undiluted wine? So Amar Lei Rava. Rava responded to Abaye and says, Hada kamart, your first question with regards to the dilution of the wine, eshtel chelkei mayim, vechad yayin, that it's 2 parts water to 1 part mine, min hayayin ha-shironi. That, you're talking about this wine from the Shiron or the Sharon. Yayin ha-shironi, lahud derafi. When it comes to yayin ha-shironi, it's a weaker form of wine. Since it's a weaker form of wine, it only requires dilution of 2 parts water to 1 part wine. But that's not the standard for normal wines or more potent wines. I was speaking about the normal case. You brought a case that's unique to that type of wine. Inami, the other possibility of how to answer this question is hata mishum chazuta. That over there, the Gemara Nida is trying to discuss coloring of the menstrual blood, and it gives markers to determine what the color of the blood is. And it uses this dilution of wine, 2 parts water to 1 part wine, to tell you that that is classified as red. Rava says, the Gemara over there is not interested in drinking the wine. The Gemara is interested in the color that is derived from such a dilution. But to drink it, you would require a higher amount of dilution. The Mishnah and Nida is simply discussing the color. In the color, it's 2 parts water and 1 part wine to get the red color that you are looking for. On the other hand, to drink it, it's still true that you need 3 parts water to 1 part wine. And the second question that you posed to me, that the water is in the pitcher and it's mitztaref to the undiluted wine, in Shabbat. When it comes to Shabbat, we need something that is considered to be significant. As long as it's significant, then it's a problem for carrying it on Shabbat. V'hanami ha-choshiv. This undiluted wine, which is 1/16 of a log, is significant because it can be diluted to make a revi'it log. It's not that it's considered a revi'it log. It's because it can generate a revi'it log of a kosher bracha. It gives it significance, and people would store such an item. And that's why they would be culpable if they carried it out. Now, Tano, we have a bright Tosefta that says, Yavesh b'kezayit. If the wine coagulates, the size to be chayav for carrying out is a kezayit, an olive size. Divrei Rabbi Natan. That is the position of Rabbi Natan. Am Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amru Davar Echad. Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda both said the same thing. Here is a machloket, Rashi and Tosafot, how to read the Gemara. Rashi believes that Abaye and Rav Yosef over here, they're going to have an interaction, but they clearly disagree with Rava's interpretation. How do they disagree with Rava's interpretation? They all believe that when it comes to a kosher bracha, you need undiluted wine as well as water. The question is, how much water do you need in there in order to dilute the wine and make it into a kosher bracha? Is revi'it the threshold or is it not the threshold? After you've diluted the wine and made it drinkable for a kosher bracha, have you reached the threshold of revi'it? Rava says yes. According to Abaye and Rabbi Yosef, it's no. Now over here, where Rabbi Natan makes the statement that coagulated wine is the size of a kezayit, and as Rashi explains, that's because a revi'it yayin, a revi'it worth of wine, when it coagulates, comes to the size of a kazayit. And over here, you need a ve'it yayin of the undiluted wine because you're not going to be able to dilute it. If it was undiluted wine and you could dilute it, it would be sufficient to be 1/16 of a log to be chayav, even according to Abai and Rav Yosef. They simply say that when you dilute it, it won't come out to be a revi'it, and it's not a proof to Rav's position. But they agree fundamentally to Rav's position that, number one, that undiluted wine of 1/16 of a log is chashul, and you would be culpable if you carried it out on Shabbat. They disagree as to what the size of diluted wine is. But when it comes to coagulated wine, they're going to agree that you need a revi'it, because over there you cannot dilute it anymore. So you must reach the threshold of a revi'it of undiluted wine in order to be chayav or culpable in that case. That's the way Rashi learns this Gemara. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that Abai and Rav Yosef fundamentally disagree with Rava. Rava believes that when it comes to a kosher bracha, you require 1/16 of a log of undiluted wine and 3 parts water to get to your revi'it yayin. On the other hand, Abai and Rav Yosef believe that the Mishnah says that yayin is undiluted wine in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah that requires when you carry out undiluted wine for kosher bracha, that is the threshold. The threshold for kosher bracha is 1/4 of a log of undiluted wine. If that's the case, why did the Mishnah segregate yayin? It should be like any other mashke, any other liquid that is mentioned inside of the Mishnah. So why does the Mishnah segregate or highlight yayin? The answer to what this says is lafuke midirova. To say, don't think like Rava, that when we're talking about the revi'it yayin over here, we're talking about diluted wine. We're talking, according to Rabbi and Rav Yosef, we're talking about undiluted wine. And that is a revi'it alog that you require of undiluted wine. So according to Tosafot, there's a much more fundamental machloket between Abai and Rav Yosef and Rava. Rava believing that revi'it alog yayin for kosher bracha is made up of 1/16 of a log of undiluted wine and then 3 parts water to get you to revi'it of diluted wine. Whereas Abai and Rav Yosef believe that a kosher bracha requires 1/4 of a log of undiluted wine in order to qualify as a kosher bracha. And that's why over here, by Rabbi Natan, it says, in order to be chayav for Yavesh, you have to have a revi'it of undiluted wine that coagulates into a kezayit. So that's consistent with their opinion that undiluted wine requires a revi'it. So that's the way Tosafot reads it. Now, the Gemara continues and explains to us how is it that Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda have the same opinion. Rabbi Natan Hadamran. Rabbi Natan's opinion we just stated, which is that the revi'it yayin that coagulates to a kezayit, that you are culpable for carrying out on Shabbat. For Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is the Braita, the Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Shisha Dvarim, Mikule Beit Shammai, Umechumre Beit Hillel. There are 6 things that Beit Shammai is Mikil, and Beit Hillel is Machmir. Now, these aren't the only items in this case. It just happens to be that that's what Rabbi Yehuda had in hand when he came to the Beit Midrash. So he said, told over those 6 items, but that's not a limitation on how many times they have a machloket where Beit Shammai is the Kula. But this is one of the instances, which is Dam Nevelot, Dam from the carcass of an animal that died, Beit Shammai Mitarim. Beit Shammai says it does not have Tumat Nevela. Beit Hillel Mitamim. Beit Hillel says that it is Tamei. And when Beit Hillel says Tamei, means Tamei Tumat Nevela. Means that it has the same Tuma as the Basar, as the flesh of such an animal. When Beit Shammai says Tahor, there are 2 different opinions of what it means. Beit Shammai might mean Tahor Legamre. Whereas Tosafot says it's Tahor from Tumat Nevela, but it still has Tumat Kala, as a lighter form of Tumat Ochlim, just not Tumat Nevela. So Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, along comes Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who is what we're looking for, and qualifies that Machloket. Af Keshitim U Beit Hillel Lo Tumu Elo B'dam Sheish Bo Revi'it. When Beit Hillel says that the Dam Nevela is Chayav for eating Nevela, that's only when the Dam has a Revi'it, a log of blood, Hoel, V'yachol Likrosh V'lamurah Kezayit. Because then it will coagulate and result in a Kezayit. And a Kezayit is the Shi'ur for Nevela. So in order to reach the Shi'ur of Nevela of Kezayit, if you have a Revi'it Dam, the two will equate. And that's why Beit Hillel says you are Chayav in this case. Amar Abaye. So Abaye responded to Rabbi Yosef and says, maybe that's not true. You, Rabbi Yosef, wants to draw a parallel between the position of Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe that's not the case. Dilma. Lohi. Adkan lo kam by Rabbi Natan. Hocha. Maybe Rabbi Natan's opinion over here, the Bai Revi'it El Biyayin the Kalish. It requires a full Revi'it of wine because wine is very thin. Aval B'dam de Samich. But blood which is viscous and thick, Kezayit Lo Bai Revi'it. You wouldn't require as much blood in order to result in a Revi'it. So maybe Rabbi Natan would not agree to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and think here that less than Revi'it would result in a Kezayit because blood is denser, more viscous, and therefore it would result in a Kezayit even without meeting the threshold of Revi'it. Inami, and the same is true the other way around. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda hotam the kezayit sagile brevit. By dam, it's sufficient that a kezayit is derived from revit because el bedam de samich, because blood is thick and it's viscous. Ava yayin de kalish, wine that is thin, kazayit ava yotermi revit. Maybe it's for wine to coagulate and result in a kazayit, you would need more than a revit. And therefore, if you went out with less than a kazayit, it would still be chayav, because that would reach the threshold of revit, even if you had less than a kazayit. What Baye says to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, is, you drew this parallel, but that's not mukhrach. It's not necessarily true, because their opinions might derive from the fact that we're talking about a particular type of liquid. And you're trying to extrapolate from that liquid to other liquid may not be true. Properties of the liquids are different, and their opinions might not then be the same when it comes to wine versus blood. And therefore, Abai rejects this parallel drawn by Rav Yosef. Ibailhu. The Gemara now asks, with regards to a Mishnah, it says, Chalav kedeg mia. The amount of milk that you normally swallow, gulp, quaff, Ibailhu. When the Mishnah says, kedeg mia, is it spelled kedeg mia with an aleph? Or kedeg mia with an ayin. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, I'll bring you a proof from the pasuk. It says, "Hagmeini namat mayim mikadeg." Whenever Abraham comes to the well and finds Rivka there, he asks her to pour for him a little bit of water. And you see that the word "Hagmeini" is spelt with an aleph. Therefore, we'll conclude that the proper spelling in the Mishnah is with an aleph and not with an ayin. Ibailuhu. Gemara continues to pose similar questions. In the previous Mishnah, in the previous perek, we spoke about garini. So is garinim spelt with an aleph or garinim is spelt with an ayin? Samarava barula. I'll prove it to you from the pasuk because it says v'nigra merkecha. It's talking about a pasuk about the yovel. When somebody sells a property between the two yovelot, when he sells the property, you have to calculate how many years have passed since the previous yovel, how many years are left until the subsequent yovel, and then v'nigra merkecha, and then you reduce the value of the item being sold. So you see the word v'nigra means to reduce within ayin. Same way that the word garin is something that is extraneous to the food, is unnecessary to the food, something that you remove. Just like vinigra merkecha is a reduction in the value, so too the garin is a reduction in the amount of food that is there. And therefore the proper spelling of garin here is with an ayin. Ibaluhu. We saw this back in Brachot. When it talks about coals that are dying or dimming, is it spelled omamot with an aleph or omamot with an ayin? What is the proper way to spell that? Amar Yitzchak Bar Avdimi will bring a pasuk from Yechezkel which says, Arazim lo amamuhu began elukim. Great cedars did not obscure him, this tree began elukim, in the garden of God. So you see that the word amamua, which means to obscure, to dim, that says lo amamuhu, they did not do it, but it's spelled with an ayin. Therefore, the proper term here for the ebbing coals is spelled with an ayin. Ibailuhu. Further on in the Masechta, there is a case by a mate, and it speaks about thereby closing the eyes of a mate. Question is, when we talk about closing the eyes of a mate, do we spell it ma'amtsim with an aleph nan? Or ma'amtsim, do we spell it with an ayin? So Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, we can bring the pasuk from Yeshaya. It talks about someone who does the right thing. It says, ve'utsem enav mira'ot bira. Someone who closes his eyes from seeing evil. You see the word utsem, close the eyes, is spelled with an ayin. Therefore, the proper way to spell the closing of the eyes is ma'amtsin with an ayin and not with an aleph. Now the Gemara continues and tries to qualify what exactly we're speaking about with regards to the milk in the Mishnah. It says, Tanu banan, mutzi chalav shel behema. If one takes out milk of an animal, kadei gemia, then it's governed by the shi'ur that's mentioned in the Mishnah, which is a swallow, a gulp, quaff of milk. Chalav shel isha. On the other hand, milk from a woman, the loven shall beitza, and the white of an egg, kidei litein b'mishifa kilur. It's for placing or helping to use for the applicator or the brush that is used to put on the eye makeup. So that white of the egg or the woman's milk was used to place on the applicator to help spread the kilur, the makeup, on the woman's eye. Kilur, the woman's makeup itself, the eye makeup, kidei l'shuf. It has to be sufficient that you mix it with water, then you could place that makeup on the eyes of the woman. How much do you have to have there? Do you have to have enough that the makeup would suffice to be placed on both eyes of the woman? Or do you need enough there that the application of the makeup, first you have to dip your finger in it and place it on the eye, or if you use an applicator and place it on the eye. When you use the finger or the applicator, it uses up some of the makeup. So do you have to have enough in order to just place enough makeup on the two eyes, but not sufficient to be lost to the applicator, whether it's the finger or the brush? Or do you have to have enough? Do you have to have enough to take it, that which would be lost to the finger or the applicator, plus the amount that would fill the two eyes? Take it. We leave that unresolved. Next thing in the mission is devash, the honey. Kedei litein ala katit. The place on the wound or the scab. Gemara says, Tana, kedei litein al pi katit. Place it on top of the wound or the scab. Bayi Ravashi, al katit apuma kula katit. When we say to place the honey on this wound, does it mean on top of the entire scab, the entire wound? Odelmar Mursha Kama the Katit. We're talking about Mursha is really a corner or a point, the first point or the primary point of the scab, meaning the head of the scab, is that where you place it? Lafuke Udrana Delo, which would not be sufficient to cover the entire scab or wound. Gemara again leaves the teku as unresolved. Everything that God created in the world was created for a necessity. There's nothing that is useless in the world. Barashav Lul, God created a snail, lekatit, in order to use as a salve or a remedy for a scab or a wound. Barazvuv created a fly, litzira, as a remedy for a bite, a wasp's sting. Itush, a mosquito, he created the nachash, as a remedy for the bite or the venom of a snake. Benachash, and the snake as a remedy, le chafafit, as Rashi says, the shchin for boils and blisters. Vissamamit, and the spider as a remedy for the sting of the akrav, of the scorpion. Hechiyavit, how do you make a spider into a remedy for the scorpion sting? Maiti chada uchma v'chada chivara, bring one black and one white spider. V'shalki luhu, and you cook them up, you boil them until they are a paste. V'shayfile, and then you rub it on the sting of the scorpion. Tarabanan, kamisha imotain, there are five fears. Emat chalash ala gibor, where the weaker one has strength or fear that is placed above someone who is stronger than them. Emat mafgia alari. A lion fears the mafgia. Rashi says it's a chayatana, a small animal, v'kula gadol, but it makes a loud sound, shomeya, and the lion hears it, v'yareshite briya gidola uboreach. He thinks that it's a much bigger animal, and it causes a fear within the lion. The lion fears an animal where it's clear that he is much bigger and stronger than the animal. Because of the sound of the voice, it fears this animal, even though it is not necessarily logical. Imat yutush alapil, the mosquito casts fear on the elephant, as Rashi says over here, because nichnas lapil bechotmo, goes up its trunk or through its nose, and the same is true with the next, which is the emat samamit al akrav. The spider causes fear to the akrav, as Rashi says, it crawls into the ear of the scorpion. Emat sonunit al anesher, fear of the swallow on the eagle, as Rashi says, the swallow places itself under the wing of the eagle and doesn't allow it to take flight, and therefore the eagle fears this swallow. And emat kilbit al Leviathan, and the fear, whether the gear says kilbit or kilchit, this small fish causes fear for Leviathan, the large, whether it's a serpent or a whale, causes fear for it. And again, Rashi says, Sheretz katan v'nichnas ledag gadol bozno, goes in through the ear of the fish and causes a problem. So in all these instances, we have smaller items or smaller animals that are causing fear amongst much larger and stronger animals. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, micro. Where do we see that in the Pasuk? Because the Pasuk says, Hamavlig shod al oz, that Hashem strengthens the shod is the destroyed or despoiled one, meaning the weaker one, al oz, on the one that is stronger. So Hashem strengthens the one that is weak above the one that is strong. Rabbi Zera Ashkach, the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zera found Rabbi Yehuda to have a kaya pitcha de bechamua. He was standing on the entrance or at the entrance to his father-in-law's house. Chazia dehava b'dicha date. He saw that he had a clear head. He was happy and that his disposition indicated that he would have insight into many things. If he asked him any question about the world in general, he would answer him. So here he goes, and he poses a number of questions to him. Why is it when the flocks go or move around that the goats go in front and then the sheep come afterward? Similar to the creation of the world. First darkness or night was created, and then afterwards light. So it's over here, the goats are black, and therefore they go first, and the sheep, which are generally white, they go second. Why is it that the sheep have thicker tails that cover over their hindquarters, whereas the goat, has a much thinner tail that does not cover over their hindquarters? The sheep, where we take the wool to make clothing for ourselves, since we use their produce to cover ourselves, therefore their tail covers over them. And the goats, which we do not use for clothing, their tail does not cover over their hindquarters. My time a gamla zutar genufte. Why is it that the camel's tail is very short? Shum dachal kise, because it eats in the thorns. If it had a longer tail, it would get caught in the thorns. My time a Torah rika genufte. Why is it that the ox has a much longer tail? Shum de dire ba'agme, because it lives in the meadows and the swamps. Uvaila karkushe bake, and has to flap the tail in order to shoo away the flies are gnats. So my time a carnad the kamsa. Why is it that the proboscis or the antennae of the locust are soft, bendable. Shum, the dire bechufik, because they live amongst the willows. Kasha, and if it was a solid or a hard item, nadya, it would move. Umit avra, and they would be blinded by it, because it would either poke back into their head or be removed and cause them to be blind. Damar Shmuel confirms this for us. Haiman, the bile, lisme, lekamtsa. Someone who wants to blind a locust, shluene, lekarne. Take out the antennae of the proboscis. My taima, hai timra, the tarnagolta, madle, leela. Why is it that the lower eyelid of the chicken covers over the upper eyelid of the chicken? In general, most people, the upper eyelid comes down and covers over the lower eyelid. But the opposite is true by the chicken, that the lower eyelid covers over the upper eyelid. So he says, the dairi adape live up on the boards, on the rafters, high up on the roof. That's where they go to roost. The ayel kitra. And if the smoke from the cooking or what is in the house goes up there, mitavra, they would be blind, because eyes would not be protected from that smoke. So therefore, the lower eyelids cover over the upper eyelids to prevent the smoke from entering into their eyes. Now the Gemara is going to go through numerous items over here where they're going to take a word and say that the word is a contraction to give meaning to the word. Whether this is the real etymology of the word or it's just the colloquial way of understanding the word, it's not clear. The Gemara is going to go through numerous words like this. The first one is dasha. Dasha, which is the entrance the door. So derech sham. That's the way to go. You go through here. Darga. Darga is a step. Derech gag. It's the way to get to the roof. Get upstairs. Matkulita is a dip that is kept around for a long time, a relish or a dip. So what's the word matkulita mean? It means matai techlada. When will this thing finish? I mean, it lasts for a very long time. So how long will it be around for? Beita. Beita means a house. What does that mean? Bo veitivba. Come and sit down in it and reside in it. Bikta. Bikta is a bayit sarvikatan. A bikta is a narrow and small house. So why is it called a bikta? Bei akta. Because it's a house that is narrow or small. Kufta. Kufta, Rashi gives three interpretations to what this kufta is. One is machteshet, it's a mill of some sort. Or it's a measuring cup for wheat. And he gives a third one, which we think it is. It's golem shel eitz. It's a unformed piece of wood, which is made for sitting on. And that's what it means over here. Kufta means kof, place it down, vitiv, and sit. It's a place to sit down, place it down so that we can sit on it. Livne, livne are bricks. So livne means livne bani, that they will last for a long time. Therefore, children and grandchildren, because bricks will stay for a long time. Hutza, hutza are reeds or a hedge that causes a separation, and that's why it's a chatzitza. It's some sort of separation or wall screen between two items. Chatzvo, chatzvo is a pitcher, chutzev mayim in a nahar, because it draws water out of the river. Kuza, kuza is a small earthenware pitcher, is kazeh. Give me a little bit of water like this. Shutita is a myrtle branch that is used to dance before the kala, tvim samech the kala. Therefore, shutita is shtuta, that one makes folly or happy acts foolish in order to misameach the kala. Mishikhla, mishikhla is a basin for water. Mashikula, everybody washes out of this basin. Mishkilta, shkilta is a small basin that's for one individual. Mashia kalta, that's a washing basin for a kala, for someone that is chashuv, that has a personal basin to wash from. Asita, asita is a mortar, is chaserta. It's missing something, it crushes things. Buchna is the pestle. Bo vechene, come and we'll crush it. Levusha, levusha are your outer garments. Lo busha, because it prevents one from being embarrassed when they have outer garments. Glima is a cloak. Shenasa bo golem, that the person is unformed in it, because the cloak does not have placement for the legs and the arms. Beg that carries over the whole body, and therefore it makes the person as if they have no shape. Gulta is a long woolen coat, is galiv etav. Roll it up, because it goes down very far. Roll it up in order to sit. Purya is a bed. Shiparim ravinala, because one procreates on it. Borzinka is a well that is dried up. Borze naki, this bor is empty. This cistern is empty of water. Sudra is a turban. And sudra, a turban, was worn by the Talmidei Chachamim of the time. Therefore, sudra represents sod Hashem lereyav. Secrets of Hashem are to those that fear him. A padno. Padno is the entrance or the castle of the king. And that is a pitcha din. On this doorway, there will be judgment. On this doorway, everything will be brought, because that's the king's palace, and everything will be brought over there. Tan Rabbanan, losha, kol zman shemaskinin, mosifim gvura. The three items that, as they age, they actually get stronger. Ve'elohein, dog, a fish. Nachash, a snake, v'chazir, and a pig. Now the Gemara continues with that which is found in the Mishnah, which is shemen kedei nasuch katan, the amount of oil that it takes to rub onto or cover a small limb of a katan. Amrei debei Rabbi Yanai, but Rabbi Yanai came to explain this and said shemen kedei nasuch ever katan shel katan ben yomo. We're talking about an ever katan here, a small limb that is the pinky or the small part of the pinky for a child that is a day old. The katan is not only about the limb itself, but it's actually about the individual. That it's not only a katan, the aver, but also the individual is a katan. Is that really true? Have a brayta that seems to separate the two. It says that oil, in order to anoint, rub on a small limb, and oil to rub on a katan ben yomo, onto a young child. My love, what is the way to read that properly? Ever katan de gadol, a small limb of a bigger, larger person. Ever gadol she katan, or a large limb of a katan that's ben yomo, that's one day old. Amil chad be rabbi yana ilo. Don't read it that way. Hachi kamar shemen kedei lasuch ever katan shel katan ben yomo. Combine the two, and it's really enough oil to cover a small limb of this small child that is a day old, that the katan is modifying both of them. When it says lema ketanai, let us say this is a machloket tanaim, because shemen kedei lasuch ever katan v'katan ben yomo divi Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, similar to the brayta that we just brought before. Then we have Rabbi Natan Omer kedei lasuch ever katan. He only has ever katan. My love, b'hakim miflegate. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Shimon Elazar sever ever katan shel katan. Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that ever katan of a katan is what we're speaking about, similar to Be Rabbi Anai. Rabbi Natan sevar ever katan de gadol, or ever gadol de katan. That when we talk about the katan here, he only mentions the word katan once. So katan either modifies the limb, or it modifies the individual. So one of them will be big, and one of them may be small. Aval ever katan shel katan ben yomo lo. But Rabbi Natan disagrees and says that a small limb of a young child that's a day old, that would not qualify. Says lo, the kuliyama ever katan de katan ben yomei lo. Everybody agrees in this braita that if it's a small limb of a young child that's a day old, that would not qualify for shemen to be chashuv to carry on Shabbat. The letta de Rabbi Anai, and they don't hold of this position of Rabbi Anai. Fahacha b'hakam iflegei, and this is the machloka between the Tanaim here of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar and Rabbi Natan, that Rabbi Shimon Elazar sevar ever katan de gadol ve'ever gadol de katan. The reason that he mentioned it twice or two statements is because one of them is it's the small limb of a larger person, or the large limb of a smaller person, of a day old baby. They're equal. Rabbi Natan Savar, Ever Katan de Gadol, in, when it's a small limb of a larger person, that is true. But Ever Gadol de Katan, a large limb of a Katan de Ben Yomo, of a day old child, lo, that does not qualify. My Havi Allah, what's the din? Tashma, we have a bright at the time, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Shemen kedui lasoch ever katan, shel katan ben yomo. So we'd see that the way to explain Rabbi Shimon Elazar is similar to the way that Bei Rabbi Yanai said, and that is that the ever katan that we are speaking about in the Mishnah is an ever katan, a small limb of a young child that is a day old, and it will be a machloket tanaim, what Bei Rabbi Yanai said. And Bei Rabbi Yanai will subscribe to that which Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, whereas Rabbi Natan will disagree. Okay, we'll stop over here.